So how do we design collective lives that allow each to hear the earth speak? It's imperative that the underlying structure of society not be designed to keep us weak, asleep, unhearing of the earth when she speaks, but rather designed to allow each one to be vibrantly alive, awake, and hearing, and deeply pondering. What physical things would let that world be? What activities can be made communal to foster individual power? By developing our collective mind and regenerating our spirits, every community must have these spaces which celebrate and honor what we've made together. And hearing our own gifts requires a deeply personal interaction with the earth, big vistas, but also quiet spaces and beauty. There must be too, in every corner of our human existence. And to probe the biggest questions, all of us must be empowered to engage, but in such a way that continuously sparks and flames joy and unity. So much of what Bentham says to power is what I say to us. Quote, know the goal, own the language, because by owning the language, we own the world. Everything we do must serve the purpose, further us toward our vision, unquote. But there the similarity ends. For his master is rule, mine the earth. His vision, totalitarianism, mine regenerated and generalized human freedom. What if non-coercion, based in, premised on abundance, was our compass, as obedience was Bentham's? I had a conversation this week with a man who asked me what I could say of relevance to folks whose PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, was about to be shut off. Remember that moment in the film Princess Bride when all seems lost and one among our small band of heroes asks, what are our assets? Well, in answer to his question, I might say, first, we need an ultimate goal, then steps along the way based in our assets. I suggested this, in fact, in Waking Up. I wrote that a good first step is an assessment of gifts, the gifts we want to live, exist, strengthen in our future freedom. Eric Fromm pointed out that Freud's whole system was premised on scarcity, not abundance. And this is true of power-sanctioned thought in general. Bentham's system used as its compass, reducing pain and enhancing happiness with one station. But this assumed that there wasn't enough. So labor must be organized efficiently, systematically, to ensure steady progress in achieving ultimate goals, or so the story goes. But more and more of us can see vastly more generous possibilities based in an abundance that exists undeniably. So what if abundance was the premise of our future visions, and our vision the premise of our daily survival existence? I just put up this week an excerpt of our July 1st, 2012 conversation, D-Way, in which you said eggs are really expensive and asked essentially, do folks really need a future vision to interrupt the constant interdiction of power designed to keep us passive and afraid? I think so. And we'll talk more about that, I know. And in two other unconnected conversations this week, one man who believes we need to reform the electoral system such that the interests of more parties are represented in government said to me, quote, there's always a game, but the game must be fair, unquote. I believe such thinking sets us on a fruitless path. In the second conversation, a man said, quote, the problem as to why the ideas expressed in this show are not getting over the airwaves is that, quote, we're all caught up in the game, unquote. Well, the game is one of those big circular spinning tops on which we're all trying to perch, and it's tossing quite a few of us off. I believe it's time for those of us who see the game is designed to toss folks off continuously, endlessly, and who don't believe a single one of us should pay the price for a tiny few to sit atop us, it's time to say we don't want to play games. We want to live, and live well.